I like to tell Trevor he is closer to a baby boomer than a millennial, so I don't know, bro. Sorry about that. Hey, how many of you like to skate growing up? I know there's some skaters in the house. All right, hey, we want to see you on that Thursday. We want to see what you got. I think I'm probably, humbly, the best skater in the church. I don't know, but I'm just saying, right? Probably not, but I want to see you there anyways. Hey, my name is Nathan. It is good to be with you. There's a Super Bowl today, so we got to talk about it real quick. How many of you got the Chiefs? Boo, right? Well, boo there. How many of you got the 49ers? All right, good. How many, like, hey, I just want to see how many times Taylor's on the screen, right? Okay. And then the rest of you, are you just like, I want the food? Right? That's a good sign. Okay, good. Awesome. Well, I just say Pat Mahomes wins too much, so hopefully go 49ers. If not, oh well, right? I want to ask you a question. I think you'll like this question. What annoys you, right? What annoys you? Not who, we'll get to that later, but what? What annoys you? Does anybody have something that annoys them? Raise their hand. And some of you are thinking, like, that annoys me when you ask me to raise your hand. I said, too bad, I'm speaking, right? So we like the participation, but we all have something that annoys us, right? So I started thinking, what annoys me? And I got a long list of things. How about this? When you call somebody, like a doctor's office, and you get like it's like an automated voice, like an AI voice, and they put you on hold, and they say, hit this for a person, and it never works. And they're like, speak to a representative, say now. We say now, like, hey, I want to talk to a person. And you wait like another 45 minutes. That's annoying. It's often said you can tell a lot by someone's personality how they say speak to a representative, right? So they hear you, right? What about bad parkers? Anybody like bad parkers? Right? I can't stand bad parkers. This week I was downtown Logansport and there's all parallel parking. Some people can parallel park, some can't. I like to think I can. And so I park my car in the lines, right? And I come out and there's two new cars in front of me, but they're so close. Like, I can't back up. Well, what am I supposed to do? There's a dude behind me with his headphones on. I'm like, bro, what world are you living in? Get out of your car and back it up. That annoys me. What about traffic? Anybody hate traffic? Right? Luckily for me, I live about two blocks from the church. I don't deal with traffic, but I hate it. You know, every once in a while, you'll be driving. And in Indiana, I lived here for a decade now in Indiana. You guys call this the promised land. I call it the construction cone land, right? It's like, what's going on? There's construction everywhere. But every once in a while, you'll be driving in traffic and you realize there's an accident. You'll start to feel a little guilty. I'm like, oh, I hope everybody's okay. But then it changes real fast. Like, hey, I hope you're okay. Now get out of my way. Like, let's go like that. What else drives me nuts? Oh, when you're talking to someone and you're telling them a story, and it's like you're really trying to talk to them, and then they're looking at their phones, and they say, huh, at the end of it. That drives me nuts. That drives me crazy. Anybody else? There's a whole list of things. So I went on BuzzFeed, and if you know what BuzzFeed is, it's like where you get all the real news. So here's what people said. Top things that annoy them. When you've been thinking about eating something when you get home all day, but when you get home, you find out someone already ate whatever it was. Ever happens? That's annoying. How about this? When everyone stands up as soon as the plane lands, right? Like, Linda, sit down. Like, you're not cutting anybody, right? It's a tube. You're in a tube and everybody's going at the same time. How about this? Maybe. When people tell me to calm down or stop being upset, I could be completely fine. But as soon as someone says one of those, my rage meter goes to 100, right? The list went on and on and on. What about this? This one drives me nuts. Maybe you do it. I'm sorry. But when you're out in public, like at Walmart, and you're speaking on speakerphone. Look, no one wants to hear that conversation. Just turn it on, put the earphones in, right? And then I started thinking, what drives us nuts? What annoys us? And then I came to the conclusion. It's summarized by one word. People. Right? People. Maybe the people that you work with, maybe right now, here's the tension. Maybe the people sitting right next to you, like, oh man, they annoy me, right? People. And so what happens is people become, we know people annoy us, but what happens is eventually we start seeing, when we live with that long enough, people start to become the problem. They're a problem, and when people are the problem, your heart gets a little calloused. You make excuses why not to love someone. Make excuses why not to treat certain people like they matter. And so we realize that people are the problem, and that can get us to grow bitter and cold. But we also have to realize, as annoyed we can get, as much as they're the problem, people are also your purpose. That I believe that God's given us all a purpose, and in that purpose is to impact people for the news of Jesus, with the gospel, to impact people. And that if you want to have a life of significance, of value, it's not necessarily have more money, go on more vacations, all that stuff is great, but it's to love people better or love people well, to love people the way God calls us to love people. So what I want to do is I want to take us to a case study today. a case study that Jesus is going to show us. And it's a moment where Jesus could easily be annoyed. It's a moment where Jesus easily could see people as the problem. It's a moment where Jesus easily could see them as the issue, but he sees people as the purpose. And what he does in this encounter, it's wild. So I call it this. It's a watch this, do this. Everybody say watch this. Watch this, do this. Do this. Let's say do this again. Do this. I feel like I'm teaching a dance class when I say that. Like, hey, watch this. Like, I'm not going to dance. But anyways, watch this, do this. Jesus is going to say, watch me, and then I want you to go do this. Because he has these moments throughout the Gospel of Luke, throughout the Gospels, where he's doing something, and it's not just something so he looks good, but something that we should pay attention to. He's teaching us something, and he's showing us a way to live. So let me set a scene. Jesus is healing people. He is casting out demons. He's teaching, and he's become very, very popular. And everywhere he goes, people want to be there. Everywhere he goes, there's people. And so they're crowding around. And well, he starts to get tired because people can be tiring. And he goes, and he goes in this boat, and he says, hey, we got to cross this sea, across this lake. And so he goes on this boat, and he takes a nap, right? Nothing hits better than a Sunday nap, does it? A Sunday nap, right? And so he's napping. Well, while they're out on this water, a storm comes up out of nowhere. It's like a storm, and the disciples start freaking out. And they're like, we're going to die. This is awful, and Jesus is just over here sleeping. Well, then they wake up Jesus, and Jesus does his best Avril Lavigne. He says, yo, chill out. What you yelling for? Lay back. It's all been done before. You know what I'm talking about? And he says, hey, calm down. I got this. And he calms the storm. He calms the storm. For the first time, they start to say, okay, he heals people. He casts out demons. But even nature listens to him. They start to get a little glimpse of who he is. And then they kind of row to the other side, and he gets out of the boat, and this is what happens. On the other side of the lake, crowds welcome Jesus because they've been waiting for him. It's like everybody wants a number. It's the BMV. Everybody's got a number, and everybody's waiting in line. They all want a piece of him. Then a man named Jairus, a leader from the local synagogue, which would be the temple, the church of the time, a respected, a valued man. What he does is he came and fell at Jesus' feet. He runs and falls at the feet of Jesus. Why? Pleading with him to come home with him. His only daughter, who was about 12 years old, was dying. So Jairus runs to him. As soon as Jesus gets out of the boat, this happens. Now, we're not going to look at this encounter, this miracle, but we have to understand this is the context of what's going on. Jairus runs to Jesus, and I wanted to share this because we need to run to the feet of Jesus. When things are going hard, when life is tough, so many times we want to isolate and run from Jesus. Jesus wants us to run to him. But he has a mission. He is going to go to Jairus' house, so he is going to go on the way. Now, I will give you the end of the story. He does heal his daughter. But before he gets there, he has another encounter. And this is how it's going to go down. As Jesus went with him, he was surrounded by the crowds. So it's like, we'll stay on the Taylor Swift analogy. Everywhere she is, people want to be. Everywhere Jesus was, people want to be. They're all surrounding him. So this is some of your worst nightmare. You're in a crowd. Everybody wants to talk to you. Everybody's looking at you. Everybody wants something from you. And a mom's like, well, that's how I live every day, right? But everybody wants something from him. And then it continues. A woman. Everybody say a woman. In the crowd had suffered for 12 years. That's a long time, 12 years. Jairus' daughter was 12 years old. This woman has been suffering for 12 years, a long time. And she has a constant bleeding. A nice way to say it is she has a constant menstrual flow that's causing her to bleed. Awkward, I know, but I said it, right? Anyways, and she could find no cure. There's this woman. That's what she's called. We don't know her name. We don't know her story. We don't know her background. We don't know much about her except her condition. So she's labeled by her condition. Anybody can relate to that? You're labeled by your mistakes, labeled by your past. She's labeled by her condition. And it says, and she could find no cure. Other gospels kind of tell this as well. It says she's gone to the doctors. She's spent the money. She's prayed. She's fasted. And there's no cure. Nothing is working. She's in pain. She's suffering. She probably can't get married. She can't have kids. It's a suffering time. And what we know is that she's going through all this by herself. You're like, well, Nathan, how do you know that? Because it doesn't say any of that, that she's going by herself. What you have to understand is that there was laws, Levitical laws, 600 plus of them, that would say that you could do this or don't do this. And certain laws, or when certain things were happening, you would be considered unclean. Well, with this type of event, you can go read it for yourself in Leviticus, this would make her unclean. Well, like, what does that mean? Does it make her dirty? No, what it means is that she was considered unclean. That would make her an outcast. That would make her a loner. That would make her overlooked. That would make her be by herself. She was not allowed to go to synagogue. She wasn't allowed to be in crowds. So we know she shouldn't even be in this crowd right now. But 12 years. 12 years, no physical contact. Not a hug, not a kiss on the forehead, not a hand laying on her to pray, because if someone else who was clean touched her, then they would be considered unclean as well. 12 years of isolation, 12 years of pain, 12 years of suffering. It's a long time. I think this is probably what she felt. She felt only shame and no love. I think it's important that we realize that when we're living our lives, when we're interacting with people day in and day out, some may annoy us, some may not, that there's people who live in shame. Shame is often one of the top things that keep people from going to church. Either being shamed by others, feeling shamed, even if people don't shame them. It's something that keeps people from experiencing God. They say, I'm too far gone. God couldn't love me. God couldn't redeem me. You see, shame says, I'm defective. I'm damaged. I'm dirty. I'm ugly. I'm worthless. I'm pitiful. I'm insignificant. I'm unlovable and unwanted. And maybe that's what you feel like. Maybe shame says that to you. But shame is also, it's the one word that keeps many of us from experiencing the presence of God in our lives. We're afraid because of our shame to go into the presence of God. We're afraid to go to Him in prayer. We're afraid to talk to Him. We're afraid to go to church and worship. And it keeps us from the presence of God, but it also keeps us from Him doing all He wants in our lives because we're not running to Him. So shame pushes us away. And so she has lived in shame for 12 years. 12 years. Here's what happens. Coming up behind Jesus, she touched the fringe of His robe, and immediately the bleeding stopped. 12 years to an instant, it stopped. She walks up to Jesus with all her shame and all her baggage and all of her uncleanness and all the things that people would be thinking about her. They may be moving out of the way. They may not notice her. They may not recognize that it's her. And what she does is she does this amazing, amazing thing. She reaches out to Jesus. You know, that's what faith is. Let's not complicate faith. Faith is reaching out to Jesus. She says, I trust Him. I believe in Him. I believe in His teachings. And I think, and I know that if I'm going to get healed, it's going to be because of Jesus. Faith is reaching out to Jesus, trusting Jesus, believing Jesus is who He said He is, believing He has a plan for us, believing He is the Lord and Savior, believing that He can save my life. And she believes all those things. She's like, if I could just touch a tassel or part of His robe, I think I could get healed. I know I can get healed. So I got to do whatever it takes to be healed. I got to do whatever it takes to reach Him. So she reaches out amongst the crowd. And the show, The Chosen, shows this beautifully. But I just imagine that there's all these people. And she can't really get right up next to Him, but she's trying to put her arm through. She's just trying to touch. She's like, I got to touch His robe. And as soon as she does, she's healed. And I love this. I heard someone say, the power of God is unleashed in our life. God works in our life through faith, trusting and believing in Jesus. Her faith ignited something. It ignited God's blessing. It ignited God to work in her life. And she trusted and she believed in Jesus, and He unleashed something. But there's another thing going on that's so beautiful. For 12 years, she was considered unclean. 12 years, that's a long time. And anyone she touched would become unclean. So how things had been and what everybody expected, if Jesus touched her, what would Jesus then become? Unclean. What happens? She doesn't make Jesus unclean. Jesus makes her clean. That's why I need some of you here today. It doesn't matter how far gone you think you are. It doesn't matter what has happened. It doesn't matter how dirty, unclean, how much shame you have. You coming to Jesus does not make Him unclean. It makes you clean. He changes your story. Jesus can handle whatever we bring to Him. So she goes and she touches him, and like we think that's the end of the story. Listen what happens next. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. Everyone denied it, and Peter said, "Master, this whole crowd is pressing up against you." But Jesus said, no, listen. "Someone deliberately touched me, for I felt a healing power go out from me." Jesus is like, "Hey, who touched me?" No one's saying anything. And then Peter speaks up, and I love Peter. Why do I love Peter? Because Peter breaks silence with stupidity over and over and over again. And that's what I've been told I do my whole life. I break silence with stupidity, right? And so I break the silence, and he breaks the silence, and he goes, "Yo, Jesus." And I don't know why, but every time I think of Peter, he's like, "Yo, Jesus." Like, I don't know why, but that's how he speaks in my mind. "Jesus, what are you talking about? Who touched you? Like, look around, dude. Everybody's touching you. You should ask, who's not touching me?" And we'll go from there. And he's like, "Peter, do you ever listen? I want to know who touched me. Not just bumped up against me, but deliberately on purpose touched me in faith. Because someone touched me in such a way that I felt the healing power go out from me." This is a pivotal moment. And when the woman realized that she could not stay hidden, she's like, "I can't stay hidden." She does something. She began to tremble, and she falls to her knees at the feet of Jesus in front of him. And the whole crowd, here's the scandal. The whole crowd would have heard her explain why she had touched him. The whole crowd would have heard why she's dirty. The whole crowd would have heard all her business, right? It's like, "Hey, I don't want anybody to know my business." Well, the whole crowd knows her business now. And that why she touched him, and that she had been immediately healed. She realizes, "Hey, I can't stay hidden. I got to," for whatever reason, she goes, "I got to come forward." And she comes forward to Jesus, and it says this word, she began to tremble. It's like shaking, it's frightened. And she's standing at Jesus, and she's at the front of feet of Jesus, and she's on her knees, and she's shaking, and she's trembling. Why? What's he going to do to me? How's he going to treat me? What's he going to say? Is he going to shame me? Is he going to embarrass me? Is this crowd going to beat me? I just broke the laws. Are they going to arrest me? What's going to happen? And isn't that like this pivotal moment in faith? Like, some people often wonder in faith sometimes is this, like, what is it like to be exposed in all our shame and ugliness and mess before Jesus? Maybe another way is asking, like, what is Jesus going to do with all my shame? What is Jesus going to do with all my ugliness? What is Jesus going to do with all my mess before him? Like, if I'm vulnerable and I open up about all this, he already knows it, but if I open up about this mess and ugliness and shame before me, what's Jesus going to do to me? That's what she's wondering. What's Jesus going to do to me? And this is what he says. He says, "Daughter," he said to her, "your faith has made you well. Now go in peace." Another way it would say is, "Get up and go in peace." There's one word I love here. One word. And it's a little indicator of how Jesus operates. Because we know the whole story. People, right, at this time, they were just getting part of the story. But this is what Jesus would say. Jesus' way of saying, "Listen, I'm flipping the religious system upside down. I'm bringing a new kingdom." And he says in his own words, "I didn't just come for the healthy. I came for the sick. I didn't just come for those who were clean. I came for the unclean. I didn't just come for those from the perfect picture Hallmark family. I came for that dysfunctional family down the street. I didn't just come for those who weren't struggling with addiction. I came with those who are struggling with addiction. I didn't just come for those who have it all together. I came to this world to save everybody. I came to seek and save the lost." And he looks at her, and she's right here, right in front of him. And he's right in front of him. The crowd is surrounding. He's right here. And she's looking at the ground. He's like, "Look up, look up, look up." And he says what? He says, "Daughter." Everybody say daughter. He says, "Daughter." And I think there's a reason that he says, "Hey, who touched me?" He knew. It was a rhetorical question. He wanted to know who touched him, not for the sake of him, but for the sake of this woman who had been called unclean, unworthy, and all these things for 12 years. And he's like, "I want you to look at me. Here's what I do. I change identities. I change stories." He says, "Daughter, daughter." Not stranger. Not, "Hey, why are you touching me, freak?" Like some of you would say, right? Like, "Why are you touching me, huh?" He doesn't shame her. He says, "Daughter." The way the Greek writes it, it's a term of endearment. And it's the only place I found in all scripture that Jesus calls someone daughter. And what I love this imagery, he says, "Get up, your faith, because faith unleashes something. Your faith has healed you." He's like, "Now go in peace." And he goes to her, calls her daughter, and her head would have been down. And I love this imagery that he lifted her head. Look at me. Look at me. Daughter,
your faith in me. Your faith in me. I did it, but your faith in me, it changed your story. Now go in peace. And I love that. I love it, love it, love this encounter. Because this is what makes Jesus different. You don't have to change to get your healing. You change because you received healing. Jesus doesn't require us to get all cleaned up and look all good, wear a three-piece suit, have all the words, have all the knowledge, have it all together for us to come to him. He says, come to me now. And once you experience my love, my grace, you understand who I am, my spirit working in you, it will change you. We don't know anything else except her faith. And in that moment, her whole life is radically and instantly changed by the power that is unleashed in her life through faith in Jesus. Jesus changed her story. She was known as shame, unlovable, unclean. What does that mean for you and me? Why is that important? Because it's a little glimpse of what the gospel is. The gospel at its core is that you and I, we're dirty, we're broken, we're sinful. There are things in our life that cause us to have shame. And if we could just for a moment, we don't ever imagine this, but if we could for a moment see ourselves the way that God could see our shame and our brokenness, if we could look in the mirror, if we could look at somebody else and they had all the attributes that we had, you know what we would do to that person? We'd probably turn from them. But what does Jesus do? What does Jesus do? He turned to us. He could have ran from us, but he turned to us, and the cross proved that. And he turned to us, and he turned to this woman, and he says, go in peace. Your faith has healed you. Your faith has healed you. Now go in peace. And then the encounter, it ends. What do we do with it? We're at the beginning. We said, it's a watch this, do this encounter. So I want to spend the next 12 minutes or so. And if you're at Vision Night, you've heard some of this already. But so many people were asking, like, what are we about? Where are we heading? I want to share with you a little bit of how we are trying and striving to live like Jesus. We have a mission here. Trevor said it, but we have this mission. It's called helping people find Jesus and live like him, right? You guys know that. And finding Jesus, that's the most important thing. We want people to find Jesus. We want them to see the hope through Jesus. We want them to know that Jesus is the only way, and he saves and he changes stories. And he saves us and he takes us out of our shame and our brokenness and our sin and offers us new life and life through eternity. We want everybody to believe that. And then we want people to live like Jesus. And part of that living like Jesus means that we want everybody to hear about encounters like Jesus had with this woman. We want everybody to hear about the transformational power that Jesus can do in this world. And that we have this responsibility, but also this privilege to go and tell people the stories like we just read, how Jesus changes story, how Jesus pulls us out of our shame, out of our brokenness, and changes the direction of our lives. And when I think about that, I think of the year 2018. Anybody remember that year? Probably not, because 2020 happened. It's like we forgot everything else. Like 2018 feels like it was 20 years ago. But 2018 in the country of Thailand, there was this kind of event that happened for about 18 days, and it was on the news, on CNN, all the news outlets forever. It was about 13 people, 12 boys and their coach. And it was one of the boys' birthday parties. And they said for fun, hey, let's go hang out in a cave. I don't know why they said that. I guess there's not much to do, but I can think of a lot of things better to do. So they went to this cave system. And they went to this cave system and they're checking out and hanging out. But what they didn't do is check the weather. Always do that, I guess, when you go into a cave. I don't know, right? I don't do that much. It starts to rain. It's during a floody season, during a monsoon season where flash floods happen. And all of a sudden, before they realize it, because they're in a cave and it's raining outside, they turn around to go back, and they realize that their path is filled with water. They're stuck. No food, no change of clothes, no water. Well, I guess they have water. They can drink the water that filled the cave. But they're stuck. And it looked a little bit like this, right? How are you going to get out of that situation? And some of you are thinking, I can swim it. Bro, no, you can't. You can't swim it. No, you can't, right? You couldn't make it. So they're stuck here where it's dry, and there's water throughout the rest of the cave. They looked for these boys and this coach for 9 days. They couldn't find them. But after day nine, they found them. They said it was like a miracle they even found them. It was like a needle in a haystack. Then the problem really happened. How are we going to get them? There's no way to get them. And some of us and some people, well, we can't all fit through here. So we got to find the right size people to fit through here. So over the next 9 days, they have 1,000 volunteers come to kind of help in this plan. And they finally, they put a plan together where some people could fit through here. They're going to have oxygen tanks, and they're going to go one kid at a time, put them on a little, like, kind of cot type thing, and they're going to swim through here with them, sharing oxygen, carry them through, and do it over and over again until the 2.5 mile stretch, they're out of it. And here's a picture of the rescue. I don't know about you, but I love you guys, but you get stuck in a cave, you better call somebody else. Like, I'm not crawling through there, no way. 9 days they did this. And guess what? Every single one of them were rescued. Every single one of them. Because one of the reporters said, we weren't leaving until we got them home. And I love that. One of the rescuers said in the report, we're not leaving until we get them home. They weren't quitting. And I love that imagery for you and me, for this community we call Revolution. We're not leaving, and we're not stopping until we go and get them. We're not stopping until everybody we come in contact knows stories like we just read. We're not stopping until everybody we know hears about Jesus. There's a verse in a book called Jude. Now, it's a book at the very end of the Bible. If you've never read a book in the Bible, go home and read Jude. Why? Because there's one chapter. That's it. You can read it, right? And this is what it says. Now, I'm going to preface this. I like to preface things. Some of you and some people, we read these, and what we're about to say might get a little uncomfortable, but allow me to explain. Here we go. It says this. And you, me, all of us, must show mercy. Everybody say mercy, because that's an important word. Mercy to those whose faith is wavering. You can also read it as, you must show mercy to those who don't yet believe or don't quite believe yet. And then it says, rescue, there's our word, rescue others by what? By snatching them from what? From the flames of judgment. Show mercy still to others, but do show, so with great caution, that's a phrase to remember, great caution, hating the sin, so none of us love sin, that contaminate their lives. Jude says, you are living in this world, and everything in this world is temporary. And everybody you ever come to eyeball to eyeball with will spend eternity somewhere. That's the reality. One day is with God or away from God. All of us. And he says, you are living on a rescue mission. You're living on mission. You're living on purpose. You're living for a reason. And it's to snatch others from the flames. Think of the imagery. Snatching them from destruction. Bringing them to Jesus. Snatching them from the flames. Anybody like to sit around fires at night? Anybody? Right? And so what do you realize? As you get closer to the fire, what happens? You feel the heat, right? Okay, you feel the heat. But also, if you sit around the fire, there's smoke. You know? And you smell like smoke. And you go in, you change, and somehow you still smell like smoke, right? Like, I just smell like smoke. Okay, unless you got one of those solo stoves. If that's you, looks like it's pretty sweet. I'm not that cool yet, right? But you smell like smoke. And I love that imagery. Flames, smoke, heat. Jude is telling us it's time to smell less safe and more like smoke. Now, not the kind of smoke you're thinking about, right? It was smoke here, okay? Listen, stay with the analogy. Where do I get this from? I get it from Jesus. To smell like smoke, you got to get close enough to the flames. Why are you getting close to flames? Because that's where people are. You can go account after account after account. There's a tax collector named Zacchaeus. I love Zacchaeus' story. He was a wee little man. He climbed a tree. Jesus walks up to him and says, hey, dude, short man, get out of the tree. I'm going to your house today. And he ate. And he ate with sinners. And he ate with tax collectors. He ate with people who were living in shame, people others hated. And he was close to the flames, and he left smelling like smoke. There's another encounter that Jesus has with a Samaritan woman. Samaritans were people that other religious people didn't like. Jews despised. But he goes through this town, and he goes to this well where this woman was, and he talks to her. And he says, hey, change the way you're living. Come on, you're living like a fool. And she leaves, and she tells everybody about Jesus. He leaves smelling a little bit more like smoke. There's another encounter with a disciple named Matthew, or some translations say Levi. He was also a tax collector. Jesus walks right up to him, right up to near the flames. Smell a little bit like smoke. He says, Matthew, stop what you're doing, because I'm about to ruin. Why don't you follow me? follow me. He follows them. Jesus sees this woman in a crowd, 12 years unclean, 12 years. He calls her daughter, smelling a little bit like smoke. Now, this is where we get it wrong. This is the tension point. We either take it to two extremes. One, we get so far from the flames that we never reach anybody. Or two, we go so far past the flames that we look just like everybody else. That's not the goal. The goal is to live with a word called mercy. What is mercy? It's having compassion and concern and patience. You need all those things to reach people. All those things. And it also encompasses offering, and they put gentle correction and guidance. Where Jesus would never leave those encounters living like those people. He would come to them in grace, and it would open the door to truth, and he would say, stop the way you're living. You're better than that. I have a better life for you. You're living in darkness. You're living in shame. I'll pull you out of that, and I offer you new life. We live close to the flames with mercy, having compassion and concern and patience, but also offering gentle correction and guidance. It says Jesus offers us a different way, a new way of living. And it may not look like this world, because the Bible says live in this world, but not of this world. We're to live snatching and rescuing people on the path of the flames. And we don't shame them to change them, right? Jesus doesn't shame this woman. He offers grace and truth, because shame pushes people away. Grace, mercy, truth brings people in. And now you may be asking, why do we do this? Well, if your story is like my story, the number one motivator for me, there's two. I lied, right? Two motivators. One, it's what Jesus did for me. Two, someone loved me enough to live close enough to the flames to smell like smoke. And that's why I'm here. And I bet if I could look at your lives and your stories, someone loved you well enough when you were close to the flames and they left smelling like smoke. And when we corporately understand we've been snatched out of the flames, we will want to snatch others from the flames. What does that mean for us? That means that we got to reach people that no one else is reaching. I don't know if you know this. There are people in this very community, in this town, who are hurting, living in shame, feel forgotten, feel overlooked, and no one's reaching them. We got to reach them. That means when we do generosity projects or outreach events, we got to ask the question, what does this community need? How can we best show the gospel? How can we best share the news of Jesus? It means we got to get a little less safe at times. It smells like smoke. Using caution, remember? It's all in there. And I love this quote. This is what I want in my bedroom, but Whitney says I can't have it, okay? So I got to figure it out somewhere. But some wish to live within the sound of a chapel bell. I want to run a rescue shop within a yard of hell. We want to reach people. Why do we do what we do? To get as many people to know Jesus as possible and to live like him. And we want to snatch people from the hands of Satan, and we want to lead them to the feet of Jesus, just like that woman went to the feet of Jesus, and Jesus changed her story. Because life change happens not at Revolution, not singing worship songs, but when as many people we know come to the feet of Jesus and know who he is, change happens. Let's go back to that encounter. We forget that he's on this way to heal another woman. Imagine Jairus. Like, Jairus, like, is saying, like, dude, you really got to stop for this woman? Like, dude, she's unclean. She's been this way forever. I got a daughter who's dying. But Jesus has this way of moving, this pace of moving, that he allows interruptions. He's interrupted so many times in his ministry. But Jesus had that unique ability to notice the one. He always notices the one. The one overlooked, the one who smelled most like smoke, the one who's unclean, the one who's unworthy, the one who's no one's loving, the one who's overlooked. He notices the one. And that's a mindset I want to capture. Do you know it's said that the average American will meet 10,000 people in their life? Some of you are like, man, I hope I never reach that number, right? 10,000 people. 10,000, that's a lot of people, isn't it? 10,000 people. Do you know what it's estimated that how many lives you'll impact out of those 10,000? They said if you're lucky, you'll impact 10. If you're really outgoing, maybe 25. But most people impact less than 10% their entire lives. That's 0.1% of people. But does it have to be that way? What if we just said, people are the problems, people annoy us, but they're also our purpose. And what if we lived in such a way, say, you know what, I'm going to live intentionally. That when my life's done, it's not 10 people. It's 25, 30, but I'm going to impact as many people as I can, not with my life, but with the news of Jesus and what Jesus has done for me, what Jesus can do with them. So on the way in today, you received a card. It says, who's your one? On that card, we want you to write a name. We want you to take that card home, put it in your wallet, put it on your fridge. Now, if that person comes over, take it down, okay? Because that's awkward, right? Put their name on it. You're going to pray over them. You're going to reach out to them. You're going to say, hey, maybe I realize that they're living close to the flames. It could be a son. It could be a daughter. It could be a family member. It could be a friend, a coworker. It could be someone you can't stand. But he said, they need to know what Jesus can do. They need to know who Jesus is and what Jesus offers. Why? Because eternity's at stake. And I'm going to pray over this person. I'm going to reach out to him. I'm going to text him. I'm going to invite him to Easter. I'm going to invite him to everything. And for 1 year, I'm going to look at this card over and over again. And next year, February 11th, 2025, you're going to come back, and the goal and the prayer is that they're sitting right next to you. And they're starting their journey of who's the one. And why do we do this? Because Jesus changes lives. We do this because that's what Jesus has done for each and every one of us. And eternity's at stake. And if we really want to live like Jesus, we got to watch him. We got to do what he does. And that means at times smelling less safe and more like smoke. And living with great caution, but reaching as many people as we can. So we don't have to start with 10,000 a day, but we got to start with one. Let's pray. God, we're so thankful that you're a God who leaves the 99 for the one. That you're a God who doesn't turn from us, but to us. That Jesus has taken all of our shame and all of our sin, and if we put our faith and trust and make him the Lord and Savior of our life, we put him on the throne of our lives, that we don't have to live in that anymore. That we can spend eternity with you and live the life you have for us. God, I thank you for the stories in this room. I thank you for the people who are willing to get close enough to the fire, the flames, and smell like smoke for us. And I'm going to pray over the stories who are about to be touched by us as we go out this church and live out who's our one. God, but what we're going to do today is we're going to sing and we're going to praise you, because that's all we know how to do. And we love you because you loved us first.